Blog Talk Radio.
It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. It's been too hard living, but I'm afraid to die. I don't know what's up there beyond the sky. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes it will. I go to the movie and I go downtown. Somebody keep telling me don't hang around. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes it will. Then I go to my brother. Hey, brother, help me please. But he winds up knocking me back down on my knees. Oh, there have been times that I thought I could last for long. But I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes it will.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another Friday night segment of Let's Talk Fort Worth. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. A reminder, we do not own the rights to the music you just heard. Also, thank you for joining us for what should be another very informative show. We ask you to please click tag and share. Tell someone Let's Talk Fort Worth is on the air. And we're about to discuss what Chesapeake Energy, TEP Barnett, and XTO Energy owes the Fort Worth community. As we shared last week, 13,000 Fort Worth residents in 400 different lawsuits sued Chesapeake Energy and won $52.5 million. We also know the City of Fort Worth, Fort Worth ISD, and the Basses also sued Chesapeake Energy for unpaid royalties and settled as well. That said, what is still owed to the rest of us? Many residents of the Fort Worth community have received very few and some no royalty payments for leases that have lasted 15 plus years. However, we know that there will be long-term effects from the fracking that the oil and gas giant has done in our community. So tonight, we'll speak with local activist and founder of Safe in the Six, Tina James. We'll also speak with Pastor Kiev Tatum, community leader and pastor of the new Mount Rose, Missionary Baptist Church, as well as Marvin Sutton, former candidate for Tarrant County Judge and former city councilman for the City of Arlington. A disclaimer, The views and opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect that of Let's Talk Fort Worth, the host, or any future advertisers. With that said, Let's Talk Fort Worth. I see some of my guests are on the phone. I think I'm missing someone. Good evening, 817-966. Good evening.
Hello.
Hi, is that you, Pastor Tatum?
It is.
Oh, good evening. 817-602, good evening. Is that Marvin Sutton?
Good evening. How are you?
Good. Fine. How are you?
Fantastic. Thanks for the invitation to participate on
your
show.
No, thank you. We're missing Miss James, but we aren't going to hope she joins us shortly. Listen, there's a lot going on with this drilling, and I really did not even understand the lasting effect of all that fracking can do to the community. But obviously, Mr. Sutton, there was some uproar in Arlington to the effect that you all had to change some laws over there in order to make the residents of Arlington happy because they were concerned about the drilling sites being too close to the community?
That's exactly correct. And there are long-term effects, upper respiratory effects. And then the fact that we're doing explosive mining close to our community, you have gas leaks, and then you have the blowouts. So that concerns community. My concern as a council member was the underserved communities were at risk more so than the affluent communities who had the resources to advocate. We did. So in the city of Arlington, because gas drilling is new to our community, mostly in West Texas, you've got acres of land where you don't have a urbanized population. In the city of Arlington and most municipalities, you do. And that creates a lot of hardship and uncertainty in our communities. What we want to do is make sure we approach it from a safety standpoint. And you look at distance. I spent 30 years air traffic controlling, and distance become your friend. And so the more distance you have between explosive mining, the outcome is a little bit better on the back end of it. So we decided to test House Bill 40, and if you're viewing on it, you're not familiar with House Bill 40. It's a distant fracking bill that was pushed by our legislator in 2015. Basically, that bill says that municipalities were restricted in what they could do when it comes to regulating gas drilling. And so we'll talk more about that in your show and how we decided what our priorities were in the city of Arlington.
Gotcha. And Pastor Tatum, when the oil and gas giant came in here, you were so concerned that you wrote, President Barack Obama about your concerns?
No, we were part of a national movement with Ocean 8, the guy's name. He's a famous actor. I can't think of his name right now. But they were doing some filming in and around where these fracking companies and oil companies had come in. And when we saw the facts and we just realized, first of all, they're the most unethical people in the whole wide world. I mean, it's just they're unethical. And so if you don't challenge them, you don't win because they're not going to do the right thing because it's the right thing to do. And I'm not sure how many of you all remember Chesapeake's CEO died the day after he was indicted, fiercely not to compete for oil and gas leases in Northwest Oklahoma. What they did to the poor blacks is simply this. They knew we didn't have representation or knowledge or competence in natural gas and oil leasing and otherwise. So they came in and signed up as much people as they could in East Fort Worth and other vulnerable communities. And then after that, they went to the more affluent communities where they knew they were going to have to negotiate. They knew they were going to work in a cohort. They knew the value and benefit of working together. And they ended up paying more per quote-unquote gas lease contract. The reality of this was they were selling the concept that it was going to be a 30-year windfall for the community. And there's just no way that was possible. There was no way. So they... To me, they were fool's gold salesmen, you know, snake oil salesmen. And because they had some cash, you know, people were thirsty for cash, and everybody started grabbing the cash. at their own demise, and now some say 7 to 10 years later, what that was 2016, whenever, you know, now people are feeling the impact of the decisions they were making. And I didn't sign a lease. Mm. I advised everyone I knew not to sign a lease because I told them all money ain't good money. And this money, having a mother who died from COPD and living in 76104 with asthma and ended up with cancer and other things, but it was all pulmonary related. Having a brother who has congested heart failure, needs a heart right now, grew up in 104, and have another brother who has triple bypass. So having this directly hit my, and no one in my family has lived over to see 64, and we're a family of 11, and it's only 4 of us left.
Mm.
So I just understood the impact or the callousness of the cities that were more cash hungry. I mean, they were just driven by this notion of receiving cash at the expense of the very vulnerable. And so they ended up putting these by houses, schools, churches, and otherwise. And as I share with you that film, that was a national conglomerate of folk who were understanding the science, the impact, and the history of this drilling and this type of drilling in urban areas and up close and personal where people were. And it just wasn't a bad deal. Now, no one trusts each other enough to come together to file the lawsuit to do what's needed because everyone hooked and crooked each other in the front end of the process.
But see, Pastor Tatum, you said you told people not to sign the lease. I talked to my landman, or not my landman, but the landman that came and approached me about signing the lease. And basically, I was feeling like what they were offering me initially was $300. I said, there's no way I'm going to sign for $300. I just knew that wasn't a good business decision. By the time they came the second time, they offered me $1,580. Well, that was over 5 times what they had initially offered me. So I thought I was really doing good. And so I still was a little hesitant. And he said, listen, ma'am, I'm going to be honest with you. Either you sign and get something, or you don't sign and get nothing. He said, well, we're going to drill down 100 feet and then go across everybody's property. That's what he said. So do you feel like that may have happened to you and the people that you encouraged not to sign?
Again, the president and CEO of Chesapeake Energy at the time, who was doing all this, Audrey McClendon, died in a fatal car wreck the day after he was indicted for conspiracy to orchestrate not to compete for oil and gas leases in Northwest Oklahoma. My mama just taught me all money ain't good money.
Right.
And when a person tell me what he told you, we gonna drill anyway. Drill, baby, drill. I will not be complicit in your process.
Wow.
See, and that's why we're in these spots, because there's no principled leadership. It's that take it or leave it mentality, and it's at the expense of the entire community. And that's
across the board. But see, Pastor Tatum, we sent a street team member over to 3020 Village Creek this week, and we found a house so close to it that the man sits in his yard and he can taste the dust that's coming off the truck and taste the gas. Now, you know, he's going to deserve something, because eventually, and he
if
has
the
a very
former
nice
CEO was charged with rigging bids for oil and gas leases.
Wow.
What makes you think?
Huh.
What makes you think they give a hill of beans about an inner city community that doesn't have the ability to fight back?
You are absolutely right. Obviously, they don't care. Marvin Sutton, did you sign a lease or did you opt out as well?
Yes, we did sign a lease, but to the pastor's point, we pulled the community together. I took a leadership role in that aspect where we brought in an expert that has background in gas drilling, background in negotiating contracts. We got one of the third highest in the city of Arlington. Yes, there's a problem with the payments. They're not coming in. The city, in its infinite wisdom, decided that, yes, the city would use some of its resources, land resources, in order to tap into those revenue. And what I would applaud the city of Arlington is, that saved that money in a fund which to create a public nonprofit organization called Arlington Tomorrow Foundation. On the council, we want to make sure underserved communities had access. These are nonprofit organizations had access to those resources, those funds, to improve our community and the livelihood of our people of color. We've been able to do that successfully. And to the pastor's point, not all money is good money, and you're absolutely right. And so from my standpoint, I wanted to be an advocate for public safety, but also for economic development and fairness across the land. Now, you're aware, Terry, that when you enter a contract that's different from what the government enters on the behalf and the trust of the people, so we hold a fiduciary responsibility to our people. When you go into contract, buyers beware, I'll say that much. Some things are not what they seem or appear to be, and so you've got to build that coalition. We in the underserved communities have yet to articulate a movement that would get us where we need to be, and that's where we hurt, and that's where our community suffers, whereas the affluent communities have those resources. And so we have to go to the ballot box to have strong leaders to advocate on our behalf. And even at the state legislative side, to make sure we're not victimizing our underserved communities and enact laws that protect us.
So, and I
one
agree.
Practical way to press Brother Sutton's point, one of the practical things I can see them doing with that money that they put in this foundation is make it eligible for the residents who want to fight back against Chesapeake and create a class of Arlington citizens so that they could, too, get some of that money back. My biggest frustration with cities, county, and other governmental entities is, yes, they participated in that process, and, yes, they got incredible windfalls, and, no, they didn't get the extra that they thought they got, and, yes, they fought in court to get their lease agreement or contract fulfilled and were able to be quite successful, but they left Joe Blow resident to fend for himself, and they're using Joe Blow's residents' money to get some more money for them. So I'm saying, and use that money that you got back from these, put in a legal trust fund to allow people to use the same legal justification that the city uses to get funds back for themselves to permanently put these natural oil and gas business on notice that you just can't go into cities and punk the people, and to make a profit. And that's all. Right now it's oil and gas speculators. Before that, it's the payday lenders. I mean, it goes on and on. The poverty pimping of the poor is what we called it back in the day, where they just are allowed to come in and take advantage of a community that's undertrained, undereducated, and undeveloped for their own personal profit. And it's wrong. And that's why I've always said it's better to leave it and have a conscience on the back end. And I don't see myself as being no prophet of any sort. I just see a person doing my homework and looking at history and understanding the impact of people's practices and policies. So when I told them back then, we're going to be in trouble 10 years from now, guess what? We're in trouble 10 years from now. And it's not M-O-N-E-Y, it's H-E-A-L-T-H. It's health. Because they are causing us to get sicker when you already have the lowest life expectancy in Texas, and now you have these natural gas drilling companies with these wells right around schools, churches, and neighborhoods. I mean, it's wrong, but the cities can't say anything because they had their hands in the cookie jar and approved it. So now they become culpable and they become liable for allowing it to happen. So it's a great big mess. I pledge not to talk about it or do anything about it because I just don't have the wherewithal. If we had the financial wherewithal, we could have sued them long ago. If we had the people coming together like our more affluent communities do, we would do something. But I don't see either or happening. So I just say we just got to live with what we have.
You know what? Speaking to the health issue, I talked to frattracking.org, and that's spelled FRATRACKING.
Yeah, I know them well.
You know them well?
Oh, yeah, they were with us.
You what?
They were with us.
Okay. Then listen, y'all.
They were part of our coalition.
Well, good, because I spoke with them today, and listen, they are definitely some people you need on your side. And some of the things that they told me today were very scary. They sent me an email basically, and they said the harmful health and environmental effects of fracking have become increasingly apparent and are supported by the steadily growing number of scientific studies and reports. Short-term health impacts, they say. Those exposed to pollutants associated with fracking may include headaches, coughing, nausea, nosebleeds, skin and eye irritation, dizziness, and shortness of breath. Then it goes on to say long-term health impacts include mental health problems such as anxiety, cardiovascular disease, and pulmonary disease like COPD. Recent studies have also found an association between pregnant women living in close proximity of fracking sites, often have low birth weight, heart defects, and premature births. Y'all, that's incredible. Now, this is where it gets really dangerous. They said exposure to radioactive material is also a serious concern. During the fracking process, naturally occurring radioactive elements like radium are drawn above ground in addition to oil and natural gas, and that exposure to radioactivity can lead to adverse health effects such as nausea, headaches, skin irritation, fatigue, and cancer. That's scary.
So the point is what?
That they're too dangerous to be in our community. That it's not, you know, what they've given us does not justify us keeping them any longer. They have not paid us properly. There's no health insurance to go along with the possible, you know, cancers and other issues that may come with it. So I say close up the wells and tell them to go home. Is it going to happen?
Well,
probably not, unless we see.
Yeah, that's not practical.
That's not practical?
At this point. Once you let the horses out the barn, I mean, once you let them out the chute, you just got to ride the race through.
Wow. But see, we're talking about
unless you have the wherewithal to take them to court, you have the people power to put enough pressure on your local governments to fund a class action lawsuit with the revenue they receive from these fracking deals. I mean, that's wishful thinking otherwise. And I just don't see it happening because too many people signed voluntarily.
Wow. You agree, Marvin? Did I lose Marvin?
I do to a certain point, but I just want to backtrack and digress just a little bit here. So the cities, and when we're talking about individual rights to enter a contract, the city is not going to infringe on that. The city's number one role is public safety, and we all know that. But when the city particularly went in to control the fracking aspect of it to protect its community, we were slammed by House Bill 40. It says, wait a minute, Railroad Commission is responsible for this gas and oil. You're not. You can control topside, and we're limited even in that, the topside.
Mm-hmm.
The city is not going to come in and regulate your contract. We don't have standing when you enter a contract as a third party. We do hold a fiduciary of public safety, and we take that seriously, and most cities do. But to the pastor's point, he's actually right. You let them horses out, you can't get them back in. And that's where the problem come in, because gas and oil lobbyists control our state and our federal government through their ability to lobby and create laws. We try with Denton as cities to protect our citizens. The state decided, no, that's not our purview to do that. We won't have the resources to even begin to fight as a city. Now, the city has liaisons and alliances, allegiances with other organizations to be able to move forward, but the funding is not there for a long battle with the gas and oil. It just doesn't happen that way. And so our primary responsibility is public safety, roads, recreation. We just don't have the resources to take that fight on. Now, the city of Arlington did go after XCO and Chesapeake for back royalties, which we did get. But the average citizen, the pastor's right. They don't have the resources to fight. And so if we can't individually fight, we suffer as a community, as a people, because we lose out on the valuable resource. Yes?
No, go ahead. Finish.
We lose out on the resources of empowering our community to do more. And you lose that voice, and you have no recourse at some point. Now, the cities just can't, and they want expose themselves to coming in, advocating as a third party for a contract that we have no standing in. And that's where the problem come in. It has to go through the legislative body to change the laws, to put in laws that will protect, that has teeth, that will protect our underserved community. This fight didn't just start. This fight been going on. We've been trying to protect our community, and we've been struggling. We have to, as a people, coalesce our resources. We've got fraternities. We've got religious, faith-based organizations who, if we could coalesce that energy, that power, that leadership to move us forward, and that's what I like. That's what I think we lack. We kind of fight amongst each other sometimes. It's a distrust sometimes. If you move back to the civil rights movement, if you walk down a dark alley and you've seen a person of color, you had no fear. But now it seems like the way our media perceives our community is we turn on each other.
Hmm.
It's long overdue that we come together and we fight the system. We empower our people to do more. We've been in this country way too long to still be struggling and still be getting crumbs off the table. We've been here too long. And I've been an advocate for empowering people, for doing more in our community. And so we have to come together as a people. If you look at the other minority population, look at the Vietnamese community, empowered. But they make up a small population of the electorate, but they have the power and resources to do more. We've got to change our trajectory and how we move and do things in our country. We've got to loosen the shackles. We've got to empower. We've got to educate. And I think that starts with our local communities.
But see, you know, okay, and I guess where I'm confused about is it wasn't like the people of Fort Worth went and got Chesapeake. It wasn't like if you didn't allow them to drill, or if you say you can't drill, they weren't going to drill. So it was like it was a no get out of situation. There was no way out. So you get into a lease agreement and you find out they have breached the contract. They have not honored what they said they were going to do. That said, somebody is responsible for helping the small man, as Pastor Tatum said a minute ago. Then who protects us? Because the city, after they settled with Chesapeake, they renegotiated their contract because obviously they felt like Chesapeake did not have a fair contract with them going in. Well, then doesn't that say that the people of Fort Worth, the small guys, should have also been able to renegotiate their contract as well?
Carrie, that we have defined roles and responsibility in our community, and you don't want to infringe on someone else's roles and responsibility. With that being said, if we go down that road where government infringes and start to say, hey, we're going to advocate for you in all means, I don't think you want to go down that way, because we want less government. We want less intrusion in our lives. We still want the protection, but you have to find a fine balance for those roles and responsibilities. And
yeah,
so
but you can't say, Brother Marvin, you can't say that on one instance and then allow these unscrupulous companies to get away whatever they want to do. Because you're not protecting the long-term stability of your community. I mean, I get that, yes, everyone has a responsibility for signing the lease. But when many people who are not familiar with those kinds of leases in the urban communities or these urban centers take their lead from the city who's signing these leases, and then when the city gets taken because everyone's following the lead of your city leadership, then the city, I think, has some fiduciary responsibility back to the people. Now, I'm not saying they can serve and represent every individual, but they have to set something up that will force these companies who they allow in and allow the permits to do what they've done.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot abrogate that responsibility because they never would be in close to those neighborhoods if it was not because of city approval. Now, I know that the state legislators tied your hands in many regards, and that's the worst group of folk I ever seen in my life. And you know that, and I know that, Marvin. It's not just with it's all across the gamut, you know, from electricity to everything, right? They're the most illiterate group I've ever seen in my life in leadership. But that was standard. Local responsibility. You guys are some of the sharpest people I've ever met. Notwithstanding your ability to understand not just the law as it stands, but your ability to take care of your fellow man, and that you can create a protection mechanism, a law protection mechanism, the same way as they create Northwest Legal Aid for other things. You know, it's not as if you can't do it. You all feel like you don't need to do it because that's going down a path you all ain't accustomed to dealing with. But I think because you led the charge and approved the permits, you got a fiduciary responsibility and a moral obligation. That's just me talking, but I only represent Key F. Tatum.
So great point, Pastor, great point. So I just want to interject a couple things real quick. Each city derives its responsibility from the Texas Constitution, and then the state of Texas derives its responsibility and roles from the U.S. Constitution. With that being said, when the city fails to act, when the state fails to act, the people are allowed to act. Let's take our local communities, Carrie, for example. We have churches in our communities, right?
Mm-hmm.
The churches play a role in our community, not only just for religious edification, but saving souls, but there's other roles that the churches play. Now churches are in the education business now. But we have to look to our local leaders, and we got to hold each of us accountable, including myself, Carrie.
Mm-hmm.
In my community, when we first heard of the gas drilling, there was a lot of uncertainty. I sought out information. I called individuals who had the experience to come in. Were those efforts replicated in other communities? And if they were they effective? We knew what we were getting into. We knew the risks. And because there were some uncertainties moving forward with it, you balanced those risks. We've got churches who benefited from a lot of that gas money. I'm not going to say it's right or wrong, but who benefit, whose parishioners benefit, who they were able to do more for their people that struggle in those churches. Now, we got to hold each other accountable, and that's where the accountable stays with us. And what I will tell you, Pastor, the government cannot fix every situation that arrives. And I'll tell you, back during that snowstorm, the city of Arlington struggled to provide warming centers. We had to go to church, faith-based organizations, help us with food distribution for warming centers. We don't have all the answers. We don't have all the solutions. We've got to come together. There's got to be a seat at the table. There's got to be access, and there's got to be opportunities. We've got to internalize in our community the leadership role to assist government when there's a problem, because we're going to run out of resources. We don't have unlimited funds, but if we come together, we become a powerful community, and we've got to be able to do that in a strategic way. And I think we hadn't articulated that position from a city point of view or from a community point of view.
Okay, I guess I hear you, Marvin, but what are you saying in terms of how do we fix this? Okay, so you take the city out of it. So how does the community fix it on their own against this big old giant?
So let's start with our faith-based organization. Let's try to get our faith-based organization on one accord. I mean, we do a great job when it comes to advocating for niches here and there, but do we have an organizational structure in the community, outside of government, outside of the politics, but a organization? Now, we have special interest organization. There's one in Arlington called Livable Arlington that has limited resources that actually goes after infractions of gas and oil. And I'll give you a prime example. The city of Arlington does not allow diesel drilling, diesel equipment that drills. Got to be electric, okay? Because
The same way, I think Ms. Carey said it and I'm saying it, that you set up these other entities and put these other restrictions to protect the interests of your residents, we're saying use some of those same monies to develop a legal advocacy group that could help struggling with these natural gas decisions that everyone made. So it's not just some of y'all. It was the churches. It was the poor. It was the well-to-do. It was the government. Everyone got hoodwinked. I mean, just tell the truth. I mean, everyone was hoodwinked. But only those who have the means to defend themselves are the ones who are going to be protected moving forward. And so that still leaves a large portion of your population vulnerable and exposed to further exposure to these natural gas people who have these drills in their neighborhood. And I'm not trying to just banter back and forth with you, Brother Sutton, because I have the utmost respect for you. So I'm not in any way, you know, trying to challenge you from a personal standpoint. My point is, if the government doesn't protect the poor against the natural gas and oil drilling folk, then who are they going to protect them from? Because there's no greater danger to the life and quality of life of the vulnerable than those natural gas drillings in those neighborhoods.
Wow.
So, and we know this because she just shared with you what science is already sharing, telling us, what health is already telling us. But that money y'all just received in settlement should go to help protect the poor, not for the rich to get more. That's all I'm saying, brother. And, I mean, that's not getting in the weeds. That's just philosophically how I believe, getting into the weeds of the law and the other things. But I know where there's a will, there's a way, because I just left New York, and New York is making ways out of no ways. You know, they're doing some incredible creative stuff. And they follow the same constitution, right? And they're positioned to defend their position to protect their people. And I just think we got to be tougher on protecting the poor, and we're not. And I appreciate the conversation, but somebody's got to protect the poor. And you're right, Margaret. You're absolutely 100% correct. Black people are our worst enemy.
Yeah, we are.
We are our worst enemy because we fight and fuss and have a tribal mentality amongst ourselves and don't have enough sense to know that if we come together, we can get more for all as opposed to some for few. I don't know where that mentality comes from, but it's straight out of the seat of the devil's den, and we have to somehow try to kill that if we are going to better our community like the other minority groups. So you're absolutely correct. You said it all sophisticated and everything, but I'm just saying it from the real deal Holyfield. We are too divided as a people for us to get better in any space. So it starts with us.
And Pastor, absolutely. So here's my dilemma as a former council member. We have limited resources. Yeah, we take in gas and oil money. We got revenues. We have limited resources. So the question is, should we invest those resources in a legal trust fund, and take a look at our budget and say, how much of this money should we take away from fire safety? How much money should we take away from road improvement? How much of that money should go there?
I thought that was separate money. I didn't make that a part of your permanent funds. This is supposed to be that auxiliary money. This had money and unanticipated revenue.
Well, so in order to run a budget, you have to run a budget with consistent money. So you got hit and miss. So to your point is, if I had a windfall that came into the city, or let's say the economy does well and our appreciations and our dividends from the royalty comes in, I've got to be able to run a consistent legal fund. If I can't do that, then it hurts the community. So we got to be able to establish where those funds are going to come from and can we consistently, long-term, sustain it. The other point I want to make is we have Urban League, we have the NAACP. Where are those organizations who have the resources and have some of the primary responsibility, because the NAACP advocate on behalf of a lot of issues, not just for black folks, for everyone.
Yeah, where but if are those they don't see a personal return, they're not going to advocate for anybody. It's all the what's in it for me now mentality of those groups. You know that, Brother Sutton. I mean, you're talking like you're one of them.
I
know what's going on in our community. Everybody's out for themselves.
Absolutely.
The NAACP for themselves. The Urban League for themselves. It's dog-eat-dog, and no one's really for the community. And that's why we have the lowest life expectancy across the board. That's why we have the lowest failure. But the enemy is within. It's the greedy, blind eye that is operating in leadership in the black community. And until we have a come-to-Jesus meeting with us, I'm so afraid they're going to keep doing what they're doing, because even those who want to help us can't help us because they're all confused about who to help, because we're fussing and fighting and divided. So let's get real. These problems are real.
Mm-hmm.
And they are hurting too many people. And
but you and
I can talk about this all day, and I don't mind. But the reality, someone's going to have to make some tough calls in our community.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody's going to have to make
some
tough calls and call out leadership that's not doing what's in the best interest of our community. Can't just have the state calling them out.
And, Marvin, you know we're not beating up
government.
Right.
Government alone can't fix all the problems. And that's my point, is we've got to pull these organizations together, because somebody's going to suffer in that process until we can get on one accord and pull everybody together. The government doesn't have the resources at the city level.
Well, the government is not – I'm here again. You can't solve the problem. You can fuel the solution to the problem. You have what we need in order to resolve the problem. It's just making the tough calls in area that we want to resolve some problems. I mean,
to your point.
It's principle versus political, and people are taking the political route, particularly in our community, and we're suffering. People dying. I mean, I've lost. Can you imagine? No one in my family has lived to be 65 growing up in 76104. Not even my mother is 64.
Wow.
So this personal to me. I mean, people can talk what they want to talk. You know, my family's dying
and
from health-related issues.
Mm-hmm.
We better do something, or otherwise we're going to die.
Yeah.
Pastor, we could put a moratorium on gas drilling and shut everything down, but that's not even feasible.
I think we could do it on paper.
By the time we get to the court system, we would lose that battle, because
the moratorium I was talking about was from the beginning. Moratorium is useless, right? That's useless. It'll cost you more for the moratorium.
But what I'm saying, you still have those long-term effects of gas drilling. So you're still exposing people of color at risk that continues to go on as long as you're doing gas drilling. If you start to shut it down.
Everywhere they're drilling, we're suing them to say more of those royalties you're drilling out of this pot stays in this community for a health fund to help these people who are suffering from COPD and other pulmonary diseases due to the impact of these drill things. And if you start putting those kind of restrictions on them, seeing cause and effect, you don't have to make a move. They're going to get up and start moving themselves.
And let me jump in here real quick. Well, let me jump in for a second here, because when we're talking about the long-term effects, first of all, there's environmental impacts as well. It includes air pollution, drinking water contamination, removing vast amounts of water from the hydrological system, given that it's too contaminated to be treated and reintroduced into the environment, soil contamination, ecosystem fragmentation, and more. So the long-term effects, we can't say what we can't do, because if we're going to kill off a population to save Chesapeake, who's going to pay the taxes, Chesapeake? So that doesn't make a smart decision, in my opinion, for the city. So the city's going to kill off all its people so that they can protect the giant? Or do they protect the people and let the giant go?
No, that's not my point. That's not my point, Carrie. My point is you're focused on the city has a solution, mm-hmm. when in fact you have a state responsibility and a federal responsibility and a community responsibility. Each one has to play mm-hmm. a role in this. An individual makes a decision to enter a contract. Mm-hmm. If that decision or the contract is violated, the individual has certain rights and to address those violation of the contract. The city has a responsibility. The state has a responsibility for the city to take on that huge role by itself. It's a disservice to our community.
Well, I think it's a disservice to the community for the city to allow them to continue to do what they're doing, knowing the ramifications of all of this. When we talk, that's the greatest disservice, because people are still suffering with the city doing nothing. At least if the city do something, there are some folk who may benefit. I'm just saying, set your residents up so that they can be successful. The city knows there was pricing. The city knows that there was conspiracy. The city knows they didn't pay the people what they said. You know all of the things they didn't do. You can educate them on these other areas that you're doing. You can educate them on the people of who can represent them. You can educate people on to empower people. You have the ability to empower. You don't have the ability to control. And what I'm saying is cities are abdicating their ability to empower, even against the state. You know what the laws is and how it bought you and what needs to change, and empower your citizens to become activated, because they know you're concerned about them. But when you're pumping the brakes on the people while the people are in pain, they don't trust you with the promise that you're going to represent their best interest. And that's all I'm saying. People are elected to represent the people, not the city. But once they get elected, they think they become the city's biggest cheerleader. And they leave the very people that elected them out to fend for themselves. Now, that doesn't make any sense to me in terms of representative government, because that's what we hire our representatives to fight like heck for us.
That's right.
And I see so many defending the city until I'm like, y'all drinking the same Kool-Aid that Chesapeake sold us.
Mm-hmm. And Marvin, we're not beating up on you. You just
I know you're not.
Okay.
But what I'm trying to, I think the point you're trying to make is the city could do more. Now listen to what we're saying here. The city could do more. You didn't say the state could do more. You didn't say the federal government could do more. You didn't say the churches could do more. You didn't say some of the nonprofits could do more. You say the cities could do more. The city of Denton went after gas and oil, the city of Denton, and said, hey, we're not doing this fracking. It's bad. The long-term effects are real. The city of Denton did that. The city of Denton was overruled by the state. Overruled by the state. The city did try to do something. Now, my question is, and Pastor, you and I agree, we are our worst enemies. We didn't do anything. If I call a town hall meeting and try to educate our community, Pastor, realistically, how many of you think will actually show up at those meetings if we were talking about educating our community?
Few. Oh, wow. Few to none.
Okay, so we're going to put a lot of energy and a lot of effort calling a town hall meeting to educate when we are our worst enemy. If we're going to do this right, we've got to have a buy-in from the community. If you want me to help, I need you to buy into it. A lot of the town hall meetings that we host, even for a $500 million budget, Pastor, maybe 10 or 15 in a population of 400,000 show up at those meetings. That's the reality.
No, I get
so
that.
We've
I get
got
it.
To come together. I think we've had to come together, and we've got to do it in a strategic way. We can go up to the city and say, hey, you should do more, you should do more, you should do more.
I think the city, by empowering its citizens to say, I'm with you, here's who we have to fight with, and we're going to fight like heck together.
Yes.
I need you, you need me to help me, and I need you. And we go down, we're going to go down together.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, we're talking about fighting together. We're not talking about defending the status quo together. I believe that there will be more people who are apt to say, the city is going to challenge the system on my behalf, then I'm going to come out and work with it. Especially in that natural gas space. I just think that space is a space where people have felt just completely exploited from the city, from the natural oil and gas folks, just from the state, everybody taking advantage of the unintelligent lease owners. Because some of those people I met who have leases in the country, they knew exactly what they were doing. And they didn't drink the Kool-Aid.
Right. So you're saying people took the lease from the city. So the city decided to go into an agreement with Gas North for royalties. It influenced some way the local communities, but if the city wouldn't have, you still have an individual responsibility under that contract because it's your property and you have certain property rights. Just like the city doesn't allow gas splitting on all its property, only selected properties. And so it becomes a responsibility for our community, for an individual responsibility. Now that you made a decision and this party that you in contract with decided to hoodwink you, now it becomes the city responsibility because the city entered a contract? Is that what I'm understanding?
No. The city approved
for
them to build those wells right next to schools, right next to churches, right next to neighborhoods. So you have not only a fiduciary responsibility, you have a moral obligation of the impact that it's causing on the health and wealth and wellness of your community. You absolutely have that responsibility. Because if I put up a poll on Newmont Rose's property, and I let people come to Newmont Rose to have events, and that poll falls and hit one of those folks, I'm responsible for the cause and effect of that poll being on my property. Mm-hmm.
Not the city of Fort Worth.
I put that poll and I approve people on my campus.
Not
I'm
the city of Fort Worth.
Responsibility. Huh?
Not the city of Fort Worth. You are. Not the city of Fort Worth, but you.
No, no.
But
I'm saying the city of Fort Worth approved them coming in.
Mm-hmm.
A city of Fort Worth approved. Because, see, y'all put other little restrictions in. If I can recall, Fort Worth was being very liberal on our side, letting them do everything on our side, on the east side.
Yes.
The west side started, you know, all the pushback and made them put them different places, put up concrete fences around them, you know, the whole nine yards. And then I read Arlington, y'all put some restrictions. You couldn't use, like you were saying, couldn't use certain kind of drilling. You had to do this, and you had to be there and there. So you put some restrictions in order to try to protect the residents. Even though you put those in, they were still not enough because we're now finding out the consequences of allowing them to do that is causing an enormous amount of impact on the public health of your most vulnerable people, after a pandemic.
But
so,
Marvin, you actually wrote that. But Marvin actually wrote that for the city of Arlington, right?
Yes, to increase the distance and underserved, especially in daycare. So my point to you is the city holds public meetings. The city can't just arbitrarily say, we're going to do it. Yes, you can do it with a vote, but we have input from our community. When we hold these meetings, just like you and I agreed, Pastor, is very few show up at those meetings. So when we're talking about gas drilling to these communities, and I oppose close proximity, I know the effects of it. I would oppose it. But when we have the meetings, Pastor, when we invite the community out, we're going to talk about gas drilling. We're going to talk about close proximity. We're going to talk about if we want to support them putting gas drilling and fracking in close proximity. We talk about that. Where is the input from the community? Nobody really shows up at those meetings. And that's what the problem is. We have these forums. We send out notifications. Nobody shows up. And so when we had an opportunity for a gas drilling next to a daycare that's owned by an African-American woman, Wanda Vinson, Mother Hearts Daycare, the first thing I asked them, Pastor, was how robust was the distribution of information for the meeting in the community? I want you to meet with our people of color. Nobody showed up, Pastor. Nobody showed up. And I said, this doesn't work for me. I can't support it, and I won't support it. And we shot the well down, and it was the right decision. A year and a half later, they come back to resubmit for a permit. I'm not on the council at that point, Pastor. But there was a lawsuit filed by a environmental organization that the city failed to follow policy. That's still ongoing situation there. But there's some things that we can do, but we have to show up at the meetings. We have to build the coalition.
Let me address that because I'm going to have to make a move. I got an 8:30 that I got to get to, and I'm not even ready to go. Here's what I'm saying to you, Brother Marvin, and to any other elected official in our representative form of government. You are 100% correct. The lack of public engagement in the affairs of our community is embarrassingly dismal, to say the least. However, if no one shows up to those meetings, it does not abdicate the fiduciary and moral responsibility and obligation of our representative form of government to do the best decision or make the best call on behalf of the people. I applaud your efforts in every decision you made leading up to where we are now. With no one saying that you didn't fight your good fight, but I'm saying at this point, after the dust is settled and we now know the conspiracy, we now know the price gouging, we now know the same things that you all sued for, the Bass brothers sued for, the Perot sued for, the airline sued for, all the big boys sued for the same thing and got the same win. I'm saying to all of you all, do you all not feel a moral obligation and a fiduciary responsibility to take care of the poor people who have the greatest public health impact at this current time? That's all I'm saying. It's not
the answer is yes, Pastor.
What
we
you've done
feel.
Because no one's questioning your ability. I'm just thinking of the psyche of leadership to protect the city at the expense of the people. And I just that doesn't make sense to me. If the city elected you, then I would say yes. But it's the people, whether they show up or not, you still got an obligation to them. And that's what I see as we call leadership.
Wow.
Right, and you're absolutely right. We do feel that responsibility. We do feel that moral obligation. But we also have to comply with the law, and we also have to petition and work with the state to change it to give us the power to do more to protect our community. We can protect the community. We can file lawsuits, but we've got to get the authority to do it. We do. I'm telling you, we do feel that responsibility, Pastor, to protect our underserved community. And I've been fighting for those communities. Whether it's economic development, whether it's access, whether it's having the resources, the better roads, better parks, we're fighting. We feel we have that responsibility. We also got to be able to raise the revenue to be able to articulate our priorities because that budget is associated with our priorities. Health, safety is real important to Marvin Sutton as an individual, as a former elected official, and I take that seriously. We've got to do more. We've got to internalize it in our communities. We've got to take these elected officials and hold them accountable. We've got to do that. together.
Marvin says, let me ask you this. Had you won Tarrant County Judge, and I was, listen, he had my vote. What do you think you could have changed as far as this Chesapeake thing is concerned from a judge's standpoint? What could have been done?
Well, you know, we have the legal aid responsibility that's partially funded through County Commissioner's Court. We can set the tone, the culture for the county, saying the county has a priority for public safety, a priority for protecting our underserved communities. That leadership starts at the top, and it is articulated to most of our municipalities. That's important that we show not only in our words, but in our action that we're going to protect our underserved communities. What I will tell you, Carrie, after George Floyd, we took a look internally at the city of Arlington, how things were done. We found discrepancies that we probably knew existed, but it brought it to the surface. Underserved communities, health issues, environmental issues. And we put together a diverse group called the Unity Council that made 35 recommendations. We, since I've come off the council, have enacted at least 90% of those recommendations. Now, they're not all perfect. We still need feedback, and we still got to go back and take a look at how can we retweak and revise this so it has the maximum impact. We were able to do that in the city of Arlington. That leadership would be great at the top of the county for the entire county of almost 2.1 million people. So it's a start. We've got to bring in our partners with the churches, with the nonprofits, to have a maximum impact. Again, I'll tell you, government alone can't do it by itself.
Okay. Listen, Pastor Tatum, thank you so much for stopping by. Pastor Tatum has a previous engagement. Thank you, Pastor Tatum, for chiming in tonight.
All right.
All right. Have a good
thank
one.
Thank you, sis. Appreciate it. And, Brother, always good talking with you. I enjoy the banner going back and forth, and I appreciate your service and your continued service to everyone, not just in Arlington, but all across this place. I appreciate it.
Thank you as well. Be blessed, Pastor.
All right.
Okay, listen, and the reason we didn't take any calls prior to, because we knew the Pastor Tatum had to get out of here tonight, so we were trying to let him get everything that he wanted to say out of here. If you have a question or a comment tonight, the call-in number is 515-605-9321. That's 515-605-9321. Then press 1 once connected. 972-987. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk Fort Worth.
Hey, good evening, Carrie. Thank you for taking my call. Good evening to you, Mr. Sutton. I sure do hate old boy has a tip out. I sure do hate he has a tip out. I wish these people, these other engagement, you – hey, this is a two-hour segment. This is dealing with the community. Man, I'm sure whatever that was he said he got going on was, yeah, he could have probably just held it off. Because I took some issues with some of the things he said. But let's start with the topic at hand. Now, had it not been for Let's Talk Fort Worth and yourself, Carrie, bringing light to this given situation over 2 weeks ago, I truly forgot about all the drilling and Chesapeake and the contracts, this, that, or that. I truly forgot all about that. But it was because of you and your due diligence that you brought this back to the community's attention. So kudos and thank you for that.
Hold on one second. Thank you.
Kudos and thank you for that. I say this to say this. I heard a lot of talking points. And it's the same old talking points we always hear when it comes to us as a people. The same old talking points, the same old narrative, the same old spills. And a lot of it came from the Reverend. You know, a lot of it came from the Reverend. First thing regarding horses. The only horses that you can't put back in the stable are wild horses. They're called wild horses for a reason because they roam and nobody could tame a wild horse. But a regular horse, oh, you could put a horse back in the stable. Trust me, you could put a horse back in the stable. The horse is at the ready and command of the owner. So as far as a contract, let's talk about contracts. Any contract, unless it's a lifetime contract, which I don't know any lifetime contracts, you can get out of them. You can get out of a contract. Contracts are designated by term limits, by times, you know what I'm saying? By time frame, time specific. Then we go back and redo it if necessary. You go buy a car, you're under a contract for what? Maybe 2-3 years, whatever the term limits are. If you violate the contract, what do? They come get that car. It's called a repossession. They don't usually come after the first payment. They don't usually come after the second payment. They're calling, they're calling, they're calling. When the third payment comes, I mean, if you miss that third payment, they coming for that car because you basically don't violate the contract. So any contract can be either redone or it can be altogether done away with. So I don't like that notion that, well, we're already in this place, so it's nothing we can do. No, I would rather do what you said, Kerry. I would rather forget it. Let's just cap the wells. Let's close. Let's shut everything down. Let's shut everything down because I would rather sustain the health and the lives that we still have and the health and the lives that are due to come, you know, in the years that are to come. I would rather sustain them. No amount of money can make up for the loss of life because of somebody's negligence or inconsideration for a particular people or community or whatever. So I say let's cap everything. Close it down. They've already broken their contractual agreement. And even if we did go back, we got a alliance together and sued, we know the lawyers off the top, they get a big chunk of that. Then you divide the rest of that amongst the people, and then we go right back to doing the same old thing, still dealing with the health issues, still dealing with the possibilities of safety issues, et cetera, et cetera. So I say close everything down. It's done. Mr. Sutton, I don't like the way you was in mid-thought and the brother cut you off. I didn't like that. I was so disgusted by that because you was in mid-thought at one point, and he came in and cut you off because you started talking about, oh, my goodness, I think you struck a nerve when you said churches. When you said churches, oh, my goodness, you can't say nothing about the church. You can't say nothing about the preachers. I'm sorry, but the black church within the black community, that's the first thing people look at before they look at government. Before they consider government, before they consider anything, people within the black community consider the black church. That's the staple. That's everything. Everything centers around the black church. With the way all these churches operate, tax free, they're not paying taxes. They get all that money in and year out from their parishioners and from whatever else other things they're doing. Why is none of that money being pumped back into the communities? If it wasn't for you, Kerry, again, Let's Talk Fort Worth. I saw the presentation that you shared earlier from Miss Tina James regarding one of the gas wells being in a proximity of, you know, in the community that is in, how it was unkempt, how they basically just said, to heck with the people, to heck with the people. So had you not shared that, I mean, again, you shine a spotlight on things that need to be shined on. She said in that given land was given to that church, Mount Tabor. She said that land was supposed to be designated for something for the community. But again, the church sold. They rather take some money. They rather sell the people out. They rather get a fast buck. And now that community, that part of Stop Six is dealing with the ramifications of that. You know what I'm saying? Some land given to you, and you couldn't do.
We want to be careful because that land he's referring to is or was owned, we understand, by Pastor Mike Bowman of the Greater Mount Tabor Church, I believe, somewhere in the South Six area. So that's all alleged, but that was something that Tina James said. He's referring to a video that Tina James made, and Tina James was supposed to be on tonight's show, and I hope she calls in to address that because those were comments
that
she made.
Okay.
So I don't.
Yeah, that's
I don't
all. I got you, Kerry. I was just repeating. I'm just repeating what I was coming from her. Okay, I got you. But again, Kerry, listen, like Mr. Sutton said, it ain't. The city council, listen, they are limited. No, I ain't gonna say they're limited. They're culpable. Yeah, it do start with them. It does start with them. And how do we deal with them? We vote them out, and we vote a new administration in. That's how we deal with them. But as far as the community, the church, it starts with the church. It starts with the black church. I'm sorry. Y'all the leaders. Y'all the leaders that everybody looks to. If I'm gonna say this real quick, Kerry. Now, he felt some type of way because Mr. Sullivan said something about the church, but I do recall a week ago, y'all was able to hold a press conference because somebody said the N-word over at Powell School because the teachers let somebody say the N-word over at Powell School. So so saying the N-word is more, oh, it's the boogeyman. They saying the N-word. That's more important than y'all coming together fighting this big conglomerate that's coming to our community that's
And Pastor Tatum's defense, Pastor Tatum did fight this thing. Pastor Tatum did not sign a lease. He told other people not to sign the lease, and he basically spoke against the drilling coming in here. So you must didn't hear him from the beginning. Huh?
No, I heard everything he said. But
it doesn't
because he's one out of whatever that did probably didn't. That doesn't. Because you're the only one, he probably don't, okay, he's one out of however many preachers who did, okay. What I'm saying is this, don't take it personal. That's what I'm saying. He felt some type of way when people started calling out the churches or the nonprofits, or he kept on alluding back to the government. No, because the first thing people see in our communities is the church. Mr. Sutton already used an example. He said when we had the winter freeze, what did he say? We couldn't get nothing from the city wasn't able to do what they needed to do, so we had to depend on the churches to do that, which they should already been doing. So all I'm saying is this: close them down, forget the negotiating, forgetting all this, because even the money doesn't. They'll throw a dollar amount. People they'll say, oh, this is good, and then people just go right back to the effects are already done. You know what I'm saying? I'm saying close them down. Let's move forward. We don't need them. They don't make enough money. And people, let's stop the suffering. That's what I'm saying. Let's stop the suffering. You said we can close them down. The easy one, but, oh, no, it's not that easy. It's not that easy. To no, close them down. Close them down. Anything can be done. It's oil wells in Texas that are abandoned in various parts of Texas that have been abandoned. So they can be closed down.
Well, we want Marvin to tell us what we can and can't do tonight. I mean, because what y'all don't understand, not only was he on the city council when the issue arose, he wrote the paperwork. Or what do you call it? Was it amendment, Marvin? Or what did you call it, an amendment or provision?
Yeah,
it was to amend
the original ordinance that in the city of Arlington, gas drilling has to be at least 600 feet from what we call protected use resources. And you're looking at schools, daycare, and other entities, homes and stuff, and businesses. Mm-hmm. If you go inside of 600, you can go inside of 600 feet, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you can't go closer than 300 feet. And the distance is based on the drill, the center of the drill well, and the boundary exterior wall. That's what our ordinance says. The problem with that is, you know, if you had a blast, the exterior brick wall or the exterior wall of a building would kind of give you some protection.
Mm-hmm.
But if you had a playground and a daycare, you're jeopardizing the safety of the kids playing on the playground, which is beyond the exterior wall. So you lose the distance. So we want to increase the distance, and that was my concern. And I do know that the Alcohol Beverage Commission code says that if you're going to operate and sell alcoholic beverages, you have to maintain a distance of at least 300 feet from the boundary of churches and schools. Now, that's a moral distance. We're talking about a safe distance because when you're fracking, you're using explosives to break big rocks to release the gas so you have natural gas. So that's one of the things I wanted to do to make sure we protect the underserved communities, because we didn't have the resources that would come out and advocate. You know, we work twice as hard to maintain the standard of living that the Floyd communities may do in fewer hours. You've got to have a strong advocate. You've got to understand the lay of the land. You've got to understand the issues and how do we address those issues. So my goal was to make sure public safety was paramount. And so we looked at it. I didn't like the feel of the ordinance, and so I moved to change that ordinance. So it is changed. It gives a little bit more protection. There's some other things I wanted to do that would have been an uphill battle, but we had the conversations, Carrie, and those conversations have to be had. the biggest struggle is getting people out of the community to come in and weigh in, because Marvin alone can't fix it. I need to hear ideas. I need to hear what you think. And that's what's important about representative government.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Adrian. So, okay, first of all, we want to know who you all use. Second of all, to who? And second of all, you know, did you get any pushback when you put this paperwork together? Was there pushback from anyone?
Absolutely, Carrie.
Absolutely.
Really? You will get pushback from Gas and Oil, one of the largest lobbies in our country. They have loads and loads of money. And energy is important to our country as well. Let's go back and look a couple of years when we had a snowstorm. We're on the brink of just Texas going off the grid. So energy is important, but we got to be able to balance it responsibly, and we got to protect our community. Utmost important to me. Here's what you can do to help us out. You got the different layers of government. Obviously, the city is subject to the state. The state is subject to the federal government. We've got to have that conversation with our elected officials to change those laws that improve and maintain our safety.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to be able to do it. We won't be able to outfund the lobbyists, but we can have those conversations, because when the election rolled around, they pay attention. They want to have those conversations. And so that's one way we can influence change. So we've got to participate in the electric system, the electoral system. Because if we don't, we won't be able to outspend them. We can outvote them. And that's important to have making changes in our country at the federal level, at the state level, and at the local level. Today, I just voted. So we've got an election going on at the local level, and I want to make sure people are aware that election's going on. And the election day is June 18th on a Saturday. It's important that you have that conversation. And I think we fail to have it. We may be too busy. And the brother said earlier is churches used to play a leadership role in a lot of things that we do in impact. They had the membership. They had the clout. They had the weight. How do they use that responsibly? It's still important to me. We've got a long fight ahead of us, a long fight. We've been in this country way too long to still be getting crumbs off the table. We should have vibrant black communities, black Wall Street. We've got to stand up. If we don't, nobody else is going to stand up for us. I'm only one voice on the council. I was able to accomplish a lot, but we've got to have the feedback. That's really crucial, to have the feedback. And if we don't, we'll suffer.
Okay, so the community knows we're in trouble, because, you know, we're seeing basically, I saw a video that the young lady had about Prairie Dog Park. That's over at 5063 Parker Henderson Road. And literally, there's a whale right next to the park. I mean, there's not even a fence, no type of barrier or anything that's even blocking the whale from the park. I mean, and on that same street, they had three waste companies. So, you know, really, I don't know who's watching out for the hood. And I say that with all due respect. And when I say the hood, I'm just referring to our neighborhood, even though we know our neighborhoods, our communities, we don't need anybody to tell us that. But I'm just wondering who's looking out for us if these types of things are being allowed to happen in our communities, when we know if that was an affluent area, there's no way that they would put a well right next to a park and then turn around and have the same three waste companies.
So, Carrie, several months back when I was running for Tarrant County Judge, we met with religious pastors. And when I went out to the African-American, predominantly African-American churches, I asked whether their concerns, because we want to make sure the concerns were. Some had to do with the redistricting part. Not once did Gas and Urban Grilling come up. Not once did that come up, that conversation.
Hmm.
I got to take responsibility. We've got to be at those churches doing a service. Maybe we can make a public announcement. We've got to have those conversations. We've got to have somebody step up and take that leadership role. The ordinance is the first thing you're going to go after in the city. What does the ordinance say? How can we tighten it up? How can we tweak it? How can we make it more palatable so that the Gas and Oil can say, hey, we can do this? You know, not everybody's going to get what they want. But we've got to advocate from a point of public safety. Your show does that.
to a certain degree. Marvin Sutton has to continue his campaign and still visit with the pastors. Hey, this has come up on my radar. What are your thoughts? What are your parishioner thoughts? Let's have the conversation. Let's create a plan. Let's go look at that ordinance. Let's go visit with those council members who have a vote to get an affirmative vote to improve public safety. That's how we start the movement.
Well, Marvin, when you say, you know, we got to come together, sometimes, you know, for whatever reason, you know, some people are followers and some people are leaders. And so a lot of people, you know, they'll, you know, be lagging behind trying to see what everybody else is going to do. So to initiate something like this, what type of numbers are you talking about would be needed in order to start something, to start the ball rolling?
So I would start with a number that would pack City Hall. Whatever the number of seats are, I would start with that number. It's important that united we bargain, divided we beg. We've been begging for a long time. There's infighting in our community, as you're aware of it. I can tell you there's infighting in the African-American community. The pastor will attest to that. We've got to stop the infighting. We're territorial. We've got to come together. And the reason I say that, Carrie, I can walk into an area of a Hispanic shopping strip. It's seldom that we find vibrant African-American communities that have shopping strips. Mm-hmm. We've got to be able to pool our resources together. We've got to have these meetings. No pastor want to give up any clout that they do have, and I've met with several churches, as you're aware of. We've got to bring the pastors on board. We've got to encourage them to advocate, to work together, lay down their differences in the community, and let's work together. This is a real issue. It won't go away. But if you're not filling those seats up at City Hall, if you're not bombarding those City Hall, the City Council member emails with concerns, nothing's going to happen, because from a former councilman perspective, that tells me you're okay with the things that are going on. The squeaky wheel gets the grease. And like right now, the city of Arlington is going through a rezoning process.
Wow.
We're getting a lot of conversation about the rezoning process. But you and I are aware, Carrie, that we just don't show up at those meetings. I don't know if it's because of lack of interest or because we're not educated. But we show up at church every Sunday. Every Sunday we show up religiously. We pay our tithe. There's got to be a responsibility somewhere that connects the churches with what's going on in the community.
I think,
and I have to take a hit for it, Carrie, we've got to do more. Brother Marvin Sutton's got to continue that campaign, the visit with the churches, work with you to get the information out.
And, you know, Marvin, the truth be told, and I hate to say this with all due respect, but the community doesn't respect the churches like they used to. So the church doesn't have as much clout as it used to, you know, just like the NAACP and others don't have as much clout anymore. So I don't know that the preacher is the only voice that the community will listen to, if that makes sense.
Well, Carrie, what I will tell you from my personal experience, candidates were visiting churches like crazy, getting an opportunity to speak. So I'm not familiar with a lot of the lay of the land when it comes to the faith-based organizational churches, who's who in those communities. But a lot of the candidates were gaining access, and sometimes it was really difficult to get access to those parishioners. But it has to start somewhere, and it has to start with me. The churches is where you have access to populations. Your reach, you have access through your internet program. We've got to hit that circuit where we're able to communicate. If it takes going to nightclubs, if it takes going to grocery stores, filing a petition, we got to do it. Matter of fact, my wife and I helped cure term limits for the city of Arlington. It wasn't an easy task. We went to those churches. We went to businesses. We found alliance that we wouldn't normally find alliance with. We did that. It took months to do it. But you got to have a vision, and you got to stay focused.
What kind of term limits did you all set?
So the term limits were a council member can only serve a maximum of 3 terms. A term is 2 years. After that council member served a maximum term, a maximum of 3 terms, 6 years,
that person could not file to be reelected to city council. However, that person could file to be elected to, as mayor. And if you're elected as mayor, you can only serve 3 2-year terms, 6 years. So you could technically serve as a council member for 6 and a mayor for 6, but you could never serve more than 12 years. You can't come back.
We're going to have to talk about that. We're going to the phone lines, 817-378. Good evening, you're on Let's Talk Fort Worth.
Good evening, Sister Carrie and Brother Sutton. Man, I hear you about that church thing, man. What you try to realize, the Jim Crow South is over with. The Civil Rights Movement died in 1967. You got a younger generation that are the majority. They not going to church, bro. That's not even the church has misused the black community just as well. The Democrats have misused the black community. We are getting shuffled behind. They put the Hispanics ahead of us. They put the Asians ahead of us. They put the LGBTQ community ahead of us. And the young folks is tired of not cashing in, and they not going for it. So I don't know what audience you're trying to reach and grab, but you can't reach and grab those old, you know, cats that's my dad age. I mean, they didn't have their time. You got to go back to the drawing board and try to get these young folks galvanized, because they the one got to put up with this mess for the next 30, 40 years. We may not be here. So you got to target and help the people that need to be helped. And right now, we not helping. Only thing is, what I'm seeing is a whole bunch of destruction, lies, weak ideas, misinformation, and the young folks is tired of it. Until you come clean and start telling the truth, you know, we're still lying and, you know, saying, you know, the Easter Bunny laid an egg and, you know, big white dude sliding down the chimney, you know. These young folks don't want to hear it, man. You got to come clean with them and tell the truth. You know, if you're going to do something, I advise you to do it. With them, 2+2=4. And so if you can't produce what you're saying, you have to go back to the drawing board and quit playing that Jim Crow politics, man, because it's out, man. We're done with that, you know. If you gotta stand up and be firm, you know, and have some hard, terrible conversations. If they don't like it, so be it. Our parents had to fight, and we're going to have to fight because it ain't no finish line for us. So we might as well go sink in, dig in, and figure out what we're doing while we're not reaching our people. If you run into these churches are not the answer because these churches ain't full of young folks. So the only thing I can tell you, brother, is you know, go back, reassess it, and you know, and try to come up with a better plan than what's been happening. Because, you know, I hate to say it, bro, you know, if you keep on doing the same thing and you keep on getting the same outcome, you know, they got a fancy word for that. But I'm going to let you figure that out. But, you know, I ain't into that losing field. You know, I play sports all my life for Kerry, you know, Brother Sutton. You know, that losing put a bad taste in my mouth. And that's what we're doing. We're putting a bad taste in these young folks' mouth because we won't stand up and fight for nothing, man. And so, you know, I digress with that. But you got to be, again, quit worrying about what the opposition got to say. That's our problem. We always putting white folks ahead of our agenda. And I'm tired of it, man. I'm tired of these old gatekeeping-ass preachers, and enough is enough, man. If y'all ain't going to do it, get out the way and let the young folks do the fighting.
Well, let me ask you this.
So,
you say the church is not the place to go. If Marvin says that, you know, he needs to find a group of people, where will we find a group of people at if it's not the church?
You got to meet people where they're at, Sister Carrie. I don't care if you got to go to the corner store. You got to go into the hood. You got to go to wherever they're at and make sure that whatever your plan is, that you execute your plan and make it work. So when we hit the ground and we do the things that we do and known to do, we are very successful at what we do because our plan is together and them young folks respect us and we can get things done. But you got to sit down, talk to them, and explain to them what's the purpose of voting, what you're going to get, and what it is, what they saying. They hear you act like the young folks ain't got no parents. And the young folks are hearing what the parents are saying, so why would they put themselves in that same hole? And so, you know, we got to go to, you know, rec centers. We got to go to where they're at. I mean, we got to hit the ground. We got to hit the ground.
Marvin, you agree with that?
He's absolutely right, and I like to visit with him offline and have a conversation about those groups. But let me share some thoughts with you real quick. So about 20 years ago, I used to register voters. I've registered over 3,000 voters. These are young voters that you're talking about. The average age in Arlington is 33 years. The more consistent voters are the older voters that will come out and vote. There was a disconnect with the younger generation that may have changed since then. We're trying to appeal to that younger voice because they're our future. But to continue on, we were registering voters, and we hit the college campuses, Carrie. We hit TCC South Campus, the Southeast Campus. We hit UTA. I don't know if we hit TCU or Texas Wesleyan. But we wanted to make sure the voters, the young people of color, and just youth in general, were familiar with the process, where to go vote, when to go vote. Let's talk about those issues. We had to go through the Justice Department, so all the early voting centers at most higher ed education facilities are early voting centers in Tarrant County. And that was through some, you know, I had to do some groundwork. I had to get out there. I had to talk to students. I was a little bit younger. Now I'm older.
Mm-hmm.
Today, I still go out to the high schools. We talk to them about name something that the government doesn't regulate that affects you. We want to get them engaged. And what I tell them is, your vote is not right or wrong. It's a choice that you make. I don't want you to feel bad because you voted for somebody that you feel passionate about. I want you to make that decision, but I want to share some information with you. We want to get them engaged. We have to go out to young people. We're in colleges trying to get that. But I will tell you, running for city council, being at UTA, being at Tarrant County College, the students have a disconnect. If you don't appeal to them, they're not going to vote.
Mm-hmm.
I've watched
that's
it over
right.
a period of time, and he's
that's
absolutely right.
Right.
We've got to go to them. And that's why I told the election administrator, we need to bring the election to the young folks. Let's take it to the campuses. It kind of backfired on me because they weren't showing up. Even though we were on their own turf, they weren't showing up. They would be at school. They would be so preoccupied with a test here, test there, or I'm going out to do this activity, that activity. We could not connect the two. And I'm still searching to find that magic bullet to do that. I would love to visit with the caller offline and have that conversation. I don't know all the answers. Be the first to admit that. I'm willing to work with everybody in order to achieve a common goal. And together, we bargain. God is in bed.
Let me ask a question. We're going into another election next year. How do you pick city council people that and mayors who are going to have the people's best interest in heart in terms of an issue as big as Chesapeake? How do we determine that's our candidate?
That's real difficult, Carrie, to answer. Because most campaigns determine a couple of things. Who's my target? Who thinks like me? And who's more apt to vote for me? And do I have the funding to reach those people? Most campaigns target the elderly because they're more consistent voters. It takes more funding to get a young person out than it does to get a consistent value voter out.
Mm-hmm.
So campaigns about winning. Let's be real. You don't run to lose. You run to win. So the campaign at some point kind of leaves the youth behind because it takes more resources.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to change the way we think as candidates. But campaign's about winning. That's what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
In a local race, you have less resources to evaluate a candidate on. In a federal and state race, you have more resources. They have more funding because of the partisan race itself. I would support what's called a green election. That means the city, the entity that calls that election, provides the candidate with a certain amount of funding so you are on a level playing field, and that entity posts on their website the views of those candidates. It's not the candidate, because you may have a candidate that's a great candidate, just doesn't have the funding to post, may not have the funding to maintain a website, but may make a great candidate and a great advocate for our community.
But should we ask them the question directly about this Chesapeake issue? Should we say, would you support us if we were trying to pursue a lawsuit with Chesapeake? Would you support, you know, pushing back how close these sites are to residential neighborhoods? Should we be asking them those questions?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because you know where the person stands on key issues. We're issue and value-based voters. We vote what's in our best interest. And a lot of times when I was registering students to vote, they had no clue about the issues that were going on in our community. I said, talk to your friend, talk to your mother, talk to someone you trust about what's important to them. You can leverage to help them achieve things that they think are important for our community, even though you may not be engaged in what's going on. So I think it's important that we do ask those questions. And what I also tell voters when I register them, never, ever walk away from the vote. Carrie, we vote for that individual because he says he's going to advocate for us. And then a couple months down the road, this individual has a short memory recall. We've got to hold him accountable. We've got to attend those meetings. We've got to stay connected with that vote all the way through. And if that person doesn't perform the way we think they perform, that's how election works. You have an opportunity to change your mind and put another person in office. So I think it's important that we ask lots of questions, questions that impact our community, questions that bring value to our community.
Because it almost seems like this ought to be an election issue. I mean, because
it
we're
is.
Probably not
be.
Going to resolve this by election time next year, but it sounds like we need to make it an issue with this upcoming, with the next election, on our next local election, is what I'm trying to say. Yes.
Yeah, that'll be next year. The next election after this runoff election will be November. And so you'll be voting for federal candidates who will take office in January. And then May, the first there in May, you have your local elections. So it's important to stay connected. It's important to attend those meetings. And even if you can't attend those meetings, they're held online. You can email your council member. But we've got to do a better job as candidates. We've got to do a better job as people who live in the community to protect our community. If we don't engage, someone else will engage on our behalf, and we may not like the outcome.
Okay, because there's so many things I could say, but I'm not. So tell us, how would we get started in fixing, first of all, the close proximity of these communities to these drilling sites? What was the steps that you took to make that happen, changing that, pushing that?
So my background is an air traffic controller. We keep airplanes 5 miles apart and 1,000 feet. We know that works. We know if you're doing something dangerous or close to being dangerous, the distance is better. Distance is always better because the impact increases the margin of safety, I'll say. So if I'm 1,000 feet from an explosion versus 200 feet, chances are I'm going to be able to survive at 1,000 feet versus 200 feet.
Mm-hmm.
What is that distance? Is that an arbitrary distance? Can we use science to back up that distance? Number one, let's talk to some of the experts. Let's go to some of the college campuses and talk to some of the professors who have the expertise. Let's work with those people to become advocates to say, hey, instead of 600 feet, 1,000 feet would be better, and here's why.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go take that information and let's circulate that information through our community, whether we hold a meeting with our fraternity, a meeting with our cliques, a meeting with our group. Let's try to build a coalition and say, hey, we've got data to prove this works. Or this doesn't work, and let's shut it down. Here's the impact. Let's meet with our elected officials and explain why and articulate our position. Then we can move forward to change that order and improve our community.
Okay. See, what I'm understanding is basically that the energy companies typically don't want to shoulder the cost of the processing of the chemical fumes. So it's cheaper for them to just let it burn off. So if we're having that situation with all those burn-offs and all these locations across the city, we're killing our people. We got to do something.
But we don't, Carrie. We don't. And that's what
happens. So they burn it off at nighttime.
Yes.
Wait a minute, they're burning it off at nighttime?
Yeah, what it is, see, when you have combustion it gets to a certain combustion level, and it triggers a failsafe to say, hey, I need to burn off before I explode. But now thing of it is that what goes up come down and hits the ground, is that contamination, carbon, you know, basically it's carbon, and where does it go? See what I'm saying? And that's what I was saying, that we have to go and play Aaron Brockovich, get soil samples, get a water sample. See, when you deal with them, because when you deal with Chesapeake, they got about 20 lawyers per site, right? And they got the big dogs. We messing with the road gangsters. And we got to have our facts straight. We got to have backing, like Brother Marvin said, get the correct data for what it is dealing with our municipal politicians. They, you know, they're relatively weak. You know, they not in the John Birch Society or none of that stuff. So it's really, we got to put, like Marvin said, it's up to us to put that pressure on them folks and show them how unhealthy these type of things is going on in our community. Also with that fracking, you have something that's called silica that's, particles that fly up in there, because that's why we stopped the rock crushing company behind Holland Hills, because that stuff was going up flying, like you explained before, Kerry, getting into your ventilation systems and that stuff gets into your lungs. But I know for a fact, and I stopped 6 years, Sister Melinda Hampton was saying they did have a rate of their males, older males, senior males are dying of cancer. But what's in between stop six, you got Encore on one side of the lake, and you got all that fracking. So it is just getting the right data, because we're looking dead at it. It just, you know, we got to learn to move on it without discretion. And how we do that, we start putting power on pressure on our officials who then took this money up on the table. People like Mark Vesey is the one who started this beating this drum for people signing these little raggedy leases, man. You know, you got to hold people accountable and call them to the carpet.
But see, we found out that Fort Worth only regulates the groundwater. And so if you look at the location over there, 3020 Village Creek, we know that the Village Creek is right behind it, and that runs off into the Trinity River. So how dangerous is that if there's a situation?
That part there. But see, thing about it is somebody gave, they put in the site plan, and somebody downtown said, let it roll. And you know who behind that, though. That's them bad. That's 7th Street Gang. And them people down there that City Hall, I ain't finna buck them, and they know better. You know, it's just sad to say, it's up to us as a community and say, hey, man, we got to get, by the data, you know, this is unhealthy for the people in this community. High pollution also brings about high crime. Dartmouth University, I think it's 1994 paper of research. Pull it for yourself. They'll tell you what that stuff do. Lead, manganese, what's driving our people crazy. I'm not surprised that people in the southeast side are violent because of the pollution that's over there. I guarantee you, if we go off in there and pull some soil samples and send some of that crap back to get EPA out there and start testing some of that stuff around there, I guarantee you that will resolve a lot of our problems and what's going on for us health-wise and the violent crime. So, you know,
well,
you got to know how to get the information.
I agree with that, too. What about the noise factor? In this location, 3020, they said that those people were drilling all night long. Marvin, what were the rules of engagement in Arlington? Could they drill all night long near a residential area?
No, ma'am. There are certain hours of doing daylight hours where they have certain designated routes for their heavy equipment to use. There are certain times of day they can use those routes. The noise pollution has to cease at certain times. So we have that built in, because noise pollution, light pollution, and the fact that it deteriorates our roads, we capture that in the ordinance to make sure we can maintain and have sustainability in our infrastructure and our quality of life. But like the brother said, we've got to step up, because nobody else is going to step up and protect us. You've got to do it. And it starts with one person. And myself, Marvin Sutton, will commit to helping any community who needs to help with what limited resources I have, the knowledge I have as a council member. You've got to be able to get in the game and understand how it's played. And he's absolutely right. A lot of members, elected officials, won't push back against special interests because they're targeted in those races. It takes a lot of funds to run races. But at the end of the day, when the votes are counted, that's what matters. And if we can't get our people to come together, we lose every single time.
Wow.
I'm willing to fight, and I have taken a fight to gas and oil.
You know, and listen, I believe Marvin can help us fight this fight over here. I mean, first of all, he was a councilman over there in Arlington when it became an issue over there. He wrote the proposal to fix it, and it worked. They fixed the issue. And so I believe that you could absolutely give us a lot of direction as to what we can do over here.
Good point, Carrie. However, I would like to work with your elected officials, work with your communities directly. I would love to have the input and work with them. So anytime we can get together, my number, 817-602-0644, that's the personal cell number, and I'm willing to meet and I'm willing to be an advocate for our community.
Wow. Marvin, I think that's so important. And honest to God, it seems like the only time we're motivated as a community is somebody says money or food. If somebody says free food, free, you know, some money being given out, you know, then the house is packed. Otherwise, you know, it's hard getting us to the table. But anytime, in my opinion, where the environment is in fact is going to be affected, your health and the health of future generations are going to be affected. Isn't that reason enough to come to the table?
It is, but it depends on your priorities. I mean, you've got family that is struggling, that are trying to make ends meet. Gas and oil drilling pollution is the last thing they're concerned about. They're trying to get food on the table. It depends on your stage in life, whether you're in college and you're worried about passing, you're worried about getting a job. But as you get older, your priorities change. It's more of a quality of life issue, environmental issues, health issues. So we've got to be able to articulate and meet people on their concerns and how do we get them engaged based on what's important to them to get the end goal met.
I understand that the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission is who oversees them. Is that correct?
Oversees who?
Basically, I understand that the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission is the primary body that regulates oil and gas companies.
At the federal side, but then Railroad Commission at the state side. And then TCEQ kind of weighs in. But what I will tell you, you would think we would have air monitors at all the well sites, Carrie. We don't.
Really?
We don't. That's a fact. And the gas and oil is not going to put those monitors in there. They're just not going to do it. And I've had that conversation. They said it's TCEQ responsibility. And so it's one side saying, well, we're not going to put in more funding in it to make it safe. You've got this regulatory agency. They should be doing it. And so it becomes our responsibility now at this point because we're in that fight for that quality of life, for health, and it's our responsibility as a community. We've been in this country way too long, Carrie, way too long.
Not
we should be one of the most powerful people in the United States of America, but we still struggle, and it bothers me that we still struggle.
We do.
You know,
and
it bothers me that it's still locking us up at an alarming rate. It bothers us that we're having to get loans at an outrageous interest rate. It shouldn't be that way, and that's the problem. We've got to step up as a community, and that's what I was trying to articulate to Pastor is we've got all these different organizations in our community. Why are we still begging? Why are we still begging?
Hmm.
We should be. We should be empowered, and people should be coming to us saying, hey, we need you to help us out. We're going to them to help us. Is this going to make sense to me? And until we change our mindset,
we're going to still struggle, I believe.
But see, Pastor, you know what? With all that we've said tonight, it is clear to me that we are owed proper compensation for them having been in here. I found my lease this week, and my lease goes back to 2007. So literally, they've had a lease on my property for that long, and I found two 1099s that were basically about $500. So from 2007 until present, I have had in my hand about $500. And so I know, you know, better than that. And I talked to the VP of land, you know, in three conversations this week, and he's with the TMP Barnett. And he told me, well, Ms. Hines, you know, the problem is your well just wasn't producing very well. Do y'all think I'm stupid enough to believe that my well wasn't producing well enough in from, you know, that period of time to now? But that's what they want us to believe. And I think, Marvin, unless we challenge it, that's what they'll continue to say.
Well, yeah. Carrie, you got to ask for the document. We got to show proof. Show me proof. You look at their financial statements. Now, we have Total, which is a French company.
Mm-hmm.
Ask for that information. If it's a public company, you can get access to that information. You can read numbers. Numbers don't lie. And so we've got to educate our people.
What document are we asking for? What document are we asking for?
Financial statements from the company.
Oh. Oh, wow.
They have financial statements. If it's a public company and it's regulated by SEC, they
mm-hmm.
have a financial statement. Those statements are required to be audited. That means a third party goes in that's not connected with the company and renders mm-hmm. an assessment on those documents.
Really? Because, see, you know
yes,
what?
Ma'am.
What he did, Marvin, he called me and said, you know, Ms. Hines, you have about a third of an acre, and so you take, you know, he started giving me these numbers, 0.0125 by, you know, and I'm thinking, are you kidding me? So he's just, you know, he's playing this numbers game, knowing I'm not even, you know, aware of how to follow what he was saying. And so basically he was like, and see, when you tally that up, that'll give you what you would have earned to this day. Now, how am I to know if the factors that he's given me are even accurate? You know, but he.
You have a contract.
Huh?
Carrie, you sign a contract.
Mm-hmm.
That contract specifies how you would be paid and how often you would be paid and how that's determined. That contract is a legal document. And that's what I was saying earlier is you have a contract between
mm-hmm.
the gas company and yourself. The
mm-hmm.
city has no standing in that contract.
Mm-hmm.
It's your responsibility
mm-hmm.
to make
mm-hmm.
sure when you sign, either you get legal representation. There's some free legal aid that's provided
yeah.
throughout the county. That,
yes.
And so it's your responsibility to look
mm-hmm.
at the contract. And if you're not happy with it, there are recourses. You don't have to enter an agreement with them. We look at the money and we get excited. And I got to admit, sometimes I don't read contracts. When I go on a cruise, I'm ready to go. We'll figure that out later on the fly. That
wow.
I shouldn't do. I wouldn't advise anybody else to do. If you have a chance, take time to read the contract and see what your responsibility is and what the other party's responsibility is. That should be defined in your contract.
Let me ask you this. Did they ever renew these leases, or did the leases, or did they just continue as long as the wells are active?
That's in your contract.
Really?
That everything is spelled out in that contract. If the contract says in on this day and that day, they can't draw gas and produce gas on your property because you own above the property, the property level, and below the property level. You own that property. So the contract should tell you everything that you need to know.
I want to compare my contract to your contract, but we're going to see. I mean, because, you know, Marvin, I was just baffled, you know, that he tried to play the numbers game on me. I mean, really just, you know, okay, I'm going to give you these factors, and that'll tell you what we owe you. And so he just started quoting out, you know, just all these, you know, 0.00 times this and
wow.
one third. And, yeah. And I thought, man, let's stop this. But one thing
right.
he tried to tell me, y'all, in the conversation was that he disagreed with me saying that they had gone to the Stop 6 community and given them $300 for sign-on bonuses and then had later gone to the affluent areas and given them more in terms of sign-on bonuses. And his logic, Marvin, was that the market was not good when they gave top six to $300 sign-on bonuses. However, by the time they got to the more affluent areas, that the market had gotten better. And so that's why some people may have got $30,000 and some people got $300. Like, really?
Well, what I will tell you, that's food for thought, but
yeah.
Your ability to negotiate is what determines what they're willing to pay. They're going to lowball you. You may start out, you know, and it's just your ability to negotiate that contract. That's really important.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they take in other environmental and economic issues.
Mm-hmm.
It's your ability to negotiate that contract.
Wow.
If they think it's a really good contract, they're not going to pay you. If the contract's worth, let's say, $20,000 signing bonus, they're not going to go up and say, hey, we're going to give you $20,000. Nobody does that. They're going to say, well, from what we see, it's worth $1,000. And then you say, well, no, that's not what I see. It's worth $20. And then it meets you in the middle where the real value of that contract is. It's your ability to negotiate.
Okay. Y'all listen, that's Marvin Slayton. Marvin, thank you so much for stopping by tonight. And, you know, listen, I told y'all we missed a great opportunity to get a Tarrant County judge that had a lot of experience. Marvin, you know what, I won't go there, but y'all, we missed a great opportunity. Tell them again, Marvin, how to reach you.
So my cell number is 817-602-0644, 817-602-0644. We're working to improve our community. We're looking for solutions. We're open to ideas. No ideas is too small or insignificant. We want to make sure we thoroughly vet those ideas. We want to make sure we engage our community. We want to improve our quality of life.
He still sounds like a politician, y'all. Listen, Marvin, thank you. You have got to come back when we figure out more about what we need to do.
Yes, ma'am, and thank you for having me on the program. I certainly appreciate your leadership in the community.
Thank you. Y'all, listen, that was Marvin Sutton. Ran for Tarrant County Judge, former Arlington City Council person. He's a veteran, and then he's a former air traffic controller. Well-rounded man. Listen, y'all, we do this each and every Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. We also want to say thank you to Kiev Tatum for coming through tonight. Thank you for etching us in your schedule because it was really tight this evening. But he did stop by and give us his opinion on what's going on, and I really appreciate it and value it. Y'all, listen, we got to come together. Marvin Sutton made that very clear. We got to start somewhere, and we got to come together in order to make this right. So I want you to know, Chesapeake, I want you to know, XCO, I want you to know, TNP Barnett. We're going to cover this, and we're going to keep covering it, and we're going to keep covering it until y'all do right by us. We want renegotiation of these leases. We want to come to the table. We want you all to come to the table and talk to us. Tell us what you're going to do, because we got people who are probably going to be facing lifetime side effects from what you all have done to our community. And we want to talk to you about it. And the sooner, the better. Y'all, listen, we do this each and every Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Tell a friend, tell a neighbor to check out the show. So until next week, we'll see you then. Good night.